What does it mean to evolve? And how can you use the principles of evolution to evolve in your career, your relationships, all sorts of things? That's what we're going to explore today in the car with Dr. Alexis Karas on Your Life in Process. Thank you so much to those of you that have signed up for the More Life in Process membership. It helps keep this show going. And I see all your names on there and I say thank you, thank you, thank you. I want to let you know that I have a fun thing coming up this summer. If you want to start a meditation practice, I'm going to be breaking down meditation, everything from how do you sit to what do you do in there to how long should you meditate for at Yoga Soup this summer, online and in person, Fridays at 8 a.m. I'm going to be joining forces with my friend Christy Peterson in that. And if you're a member of Your Life in Process, you're going to get those recordings in your membership. So if you want to get started on meditation, don't forget to check your membership to listen and practice with me. And hopefully by the end of the summer, you will be in a good groove with your home practice. If you want to become a member, go to yourlifeinprocess.com. It's a way to support the show. And you also can get more of these practices and ideas if you sign up for my newsletter. I have a new Wise Effort newsletter that goes out every Tuesday, and we're going to be focusing on this concept of wise effort, applying the principles of psychological flexibility and contemplative practice in your daily life to build the life that you want and the world that we want to live in. Go to drdianahill.com to sign up for my newsletter. Welcome back to season 5. It's so good to have you here. And thank you for sticking with me. It's been about a year and a half since I started this podcast. And when I started it, I kind of went out on a limb, mixed things up, changed things up, because I have learned in my life that in order to evolve, I need variability. I am a creature of comfort and I tend to get stuck in things. I would eat the same thing every day, go on the same run every day, watch the same show every day if I could. But when we get stuck in our comfort zones, we actually stop growing. Life takes effort. We need to pace ourselves, rest, push, rest. But we also need to make wise decisions about where we want to put our energy, where we would want to put our time and resources. And this season, I'm going to be doing that for myself. I hope that I'm modeling that to some degree for you all, but also I want you to do it for you. This season is all about wise effort. Some of the places where you're putting a lot of energy are just not worth it. Some things are very worth it, but painful. And so you've been avoiding them. And some things are really beneficial for you to savor and to enjoy, but you're pushing so hard, you're not letting yourself really sink into the beauty of your life as it is right here and right now. So this season is about helping you get out of burnout, if you've been in burnout, helping you navigate important decisions in your life and knowing when to push, when to grit, and when to quit, as well as enjoying the good things and taking it all in. We only live once. This is it, my friends. In this season, we're going to use the practices of psychological flexibility so that you can put wise effort into the areas of your life that matter to you. I'm going to be talking with experts, like always, in interview format, but I'm also going to be mixing things up with a few solo episodes where I coach you directly in wise effort and talking to people in a really real way about how they're using wise effort in their lives, what it looks like to put these skills into practice. So today I'm talking to Alexis Karas, my good friend. We did this podcast completely on the whim. I have this really cool tiny little microphone that has these two lapel mics on it that I use for teaching meditation. My husband got it for me as a gift. It was very much a Homer gift. It was very exciting for him. As Homer Simpson would give Marge Simpson a bowling ball, he gives me these little tiny microphone gadgets, but it paid off. I took it to Colorado with me when I was out to visit some psychologist friends. This is sort of group therapy for the super brave here, because if you can imagine a weekend with 5 psychologists, how intense it can get. And Alexis and I were in the car and I pressed record. Let's do it. Let's talk about psychology, what's going on in our lives. I've known Alexis for 20 years. We have a lot of history. She's a positive psychologist. We went to graduate school together at the University of Colorado at Boulder. Before that, she was at Brown University, and now she's a professor of psychology, looking at positive character strengths and how they relate to mental health outcomes. So we didn't prepare for this. I had the mics in my bag. We were going to be in a couple of hours. And I wanted to talk about this concept of evolution that is really a thread throughout process-based therapy. So process-based therapy is where therapy is headed, where psychological interventions are headed, where we're looking at more of this overarching model of what are the processes that keep people stuck and what are the processes that will lead you to thriving in your life. And at the foundation of process-based therapy is evolutionary theory. So yes, we can evolve at the genetic level, epigenetic level. We can also evolve culturally, and we can also evolve psychologically in this lifetime. And the principles of evolution from genetics apply to our principles of psychological evolution. So the three very simple principles that Alexis and I are going to talk about in a very fluid storytelling applied way of evolution are variation, selection, and retention. So variation is about doing something different and new than the way that you always do it. Selection is choosing behaviors that build value, health, and vitality in your life. And then retention has to do with reinforcing and maintaining these value-consistent behaviors. So Alexis and I are going to talk about this type of evolution in our own lives, how she's doing it, how I'm doing it. We talk a little bit about themes across the midlife of 30, 40s, and 50s. And I also want to say that our life doesn't end at 50. You know, it actually gets really good in our 60s, 70s, and 80s. Folks that are in their 60s and 70s are often the ones that are engaging with the wisest effort. But I hope you enjoy this podcast with Alexis. Let me know how it goes for you. And we will be back next week with a conversation with Kimberly Wilson about nutrition and brain health. And that is another area of wise effort, how we're taking care of our bodies. Okay, enjoy this conversation. We're talking about variability and how in order to evolve ourselves and evolve within our businesses, we actually need to have change happen. Sometimes we need to be the originators of that change because we've gotten so stagnant. We need to change things up, or change is just naturally going to happen and we need to go with the change and not resist it.
Yeah.
And what I have found in my career and in my podcast is I really like getting into my comfort zone and then staying there for a really long time because things get easier over time. And I also know when I do that, I'm blocking something that's important to do from happening. And I wanted to have a little variability on this podcast. I have been in the position of interviewing people to gather information and learn for a very long time, whether that's been this last 6 years of podcasting, almost 7 years, or just our education is receive other people's information and then digest it and then spit it back out.
Right.
I want to have more of the voice and things.
Yeah, because we can also feel like we're perpetually the learner. And so we're just regurgitating versus originating.
Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah.
Originating. And I mean, you're kind of in that. You're in that place because you're originating in your career. You're about to go on sabbatical. You've been a professor for...
Yeah, like almost 15 years. And this is the first time I've actually applied for sabbatical. We're eligible every 8 years. And it just didn't work out time-wise. And then I was like, now that my kids are a little bit older, it made a lot of sense. And so I'm going off on a limb and it's stinking scary. In fact, it's so scary, the change, Diana, that like a lot of professors don't even do sabbatical because it's easier to just teach and do the same old what you know.
Right. It's easier to teach the same course that you've been teaching
for 15 courses, years. Yeah, same courses, same semester, predictability.
Yeah.
Yeah, than it is to actually come up with a proposal that you are now on the hook for producing, whether that's a manuscript, a research project, a book, like whatever it is, like that's freaking scary.
So then what got you there? Because you have been in like a comfort zone with your job. Like how did you get...
The honest truth was like I was circulating a few different ideas. I didn't have something that was really easy. I thought of the big book proposal to write about my journey of infertility from a positive psych standpoint, but that seemed way too scary. And then I didn't know the actual deadline for the proposal.
I kind of remember that.
And I was like, and then it was upon me and it was like the start of the semester and it was like all this stuff was happening and it was like, oh my gosh, if I'm going to do this, it's due by Friday at you know, 5 p.m. And it was like, I had no time to think. And
yeah.
It was like, I got to get something in if I want this to happen for the following year.
Yeah.
So
some of it's just, you have to kind of go in the moment, jump.
Yeah, I jumped. That word has importance to us. There's a story about that.
You got to tell it now. Don't tell in detail. What's the story?
Oh, a student of mine, last day of class, just a few days ago. And he was like, sometimes you just really need to jump. And I was like, what do you mean? What are you talking about? He's like, don't you know? Like, you just need to jump. Like, you just need to do things. Like, you just need to, like, you know, turn your direction, go on that vacation, take your kids to whatever. Like, you don't need approval. You just go do it. And yeah. I was looking at him like I didn't know what the hell he was talking about. But
yeah. Well, you think there's an element of the youth of that, like the 19-year-old, the 20-year-old that's doing jumping all over the place. I mean, that's how they're living. And we lose that dynamic within ourselves because we get so comfortable in our lives. We forget to jump. And he was seeing potential in you. I think he had a crush on you, and we know that. Yeah, hot psychology teacher. And that's okay. Like, you can take that energy and actually learn from what he saw in you. It's like, you need to jump.
Well,
he's right.
He saw me going on sabbatical and writing a book as a jump.
Yeah.
And he even said, I want your stinking book. I was like, it's on infertility. He was like, I know, but I don't know anything. So, yeah. But, I mean, he felt the excitement of me making a jump in my life, and there are other jumps that I'm probably making in my life.
Yeah.
But I think that there is excitement around that, and is that evolution? I don't know. Is that evolving?
Evolving. Well, evolving has three parts. So the first part is variability, and that's what we're talking about. Increasing variability, doing things that are outside of your norm, uh-huh. behaviorally, thinking about things, reading things, being around people that are outside of your norm, whatever that variability is. And then the second part of evolution has to do with selection, which is what actually worked, you know?
What do you mean?
So you select a behavior that's actually giving you what you want. So if we do, for example, if I mix up this podcast, I do variability, and say the one thing I'm interested in is interviewing people like you, super highly successful people, to look at these processes, how acceptance has played out in their lives, how their values have played out in their lives, mm-hmm. what have the processes done for them, and then also where they're stuck right now and how I could help them get unstuck. If I do something like that and I put it out in the world and it ends up not being successful, people are not interested in it, or it ends up not feeling fulfilling to me, mm-hmm. then I wouldn't select that. I wouldn't stick with it. I would go back to variability again. Mm-hmm. Right? So the selection part is when you're doing variability with your behavior, what actually works, well, given what you want? And this is like the difference between goals, values, and yeah.
So how do I know? Because I'm about to write a book, and I really actually don't like writing.
Yeah, well, the first question is why you're writing a book? Is it about to enjoy writing, or is it about something else?
No.
I mean, often it's about
values. It's about my values, getting the story out, potentially helping other women.
Let's clarify that, values. So you want to get the story out, you want to help women. Mm-hmm. How do you want to be in writing?
I want to be vulnerable. I want people to know my personal story. I want them to feel uplifted. I want to give some landscape of infertility.
Uh-huh.
Is that what you mean?
Yeah. Yeah. So you want to be vulnerable, you want to be out there, but you also have you've talked about also wanting to educate.
Yeah, folks. Wanting to educate.
Like what was it you said? You want to give somebody what
like
you
the
didn't
guide,
get.
Yeah, like the cliff notes of how to navigate this journey, which is extremely difficult, and you don't know how many mountains there are to climb in the particular journey, and there's so many discoveries, and everything is foreign and unknown, and it's overwhelming. It's an overwhelming amount of information, medical information, uncertainty, and so forth. So to be able to give somewhat of a roadmap for women would be
Then that turns into also some goals. Like you could create goals out of those values in terms of am I creating a roadmap here? Am I being vulnerable here? Am I offering information for women? Am I telling my story? Those would be all goals that you could almost make a checklist as you're writing. I didn't hear on there, like, I want to be a good writer.
Yeah, I don't want to be a good writer.
But for some people who are writing a book, that's what they want. Like, no, they really want to create
good
writing.
I would like to lean on other people to edit and make it, you know, pretty.
Yeah. So when you're doing the selection piece, when you're doing the variability of, like, I'm not teaching, but now I'm writing, the selection has to be lined up with your values. Like, is this actually, is doing this, writing this book, achieving, allowing me to, I'm living out those values and also achieving those values-based goals for me. What will happen is that we select things that aren't actually aligned with our values, or we don't do things that are aligned with our values or our values-based goals, which would be like, I'm not a writer, or I don't like writing, so I'm not going to write a book. And that becomes the block to keep us in our comfort zone of never writing a book and just keeping on teaching your same psychology class for years and years. But once you can see, like, oh, actually, it's not about being a, you can get AI
to, I'm not going to get ChatGPT to write my book.
No,
let's be clear.
Yeah, but you will.
That is.
But
seductive.
You can get good editors to help you write.
Yeah, exactly.
Write a book.
Exactly.
And that's not your goal, is to be a good writer.
Yeah.
And that's not your values. So that, so the second part is selection and even knowing what you're selecting for, right? That you're selecting for values-based goals.
So how does this look for you on your podcast? Look, we just talked about it for me, for my year of sabbatical writing a book. But what is this, what does this look like for you and your podcast?
So variability is shaking things up, not just doing the same thing that I've been doing years and years and years. The values behind that, and then the values-based goals that I'm going to be selecting for, to see it, like, does this variability match those goals, right? Will be things like, do I have a sense, I really want to feel a sense of vitality in the work, in doing work. I am at the age that I'm at, I'm tired of feeling burned out. I don't want to feel burned out. I want to feel interest, engagement, excitement in the things that I do. I want to bring vitality to what I do. And then another value of mine is helping people. And I actually find, I'm going to say the honest truth, is that we're all kind of getting sick of the millions of podcasts out there that are book interviews. Like it. We feel like we're we feel like we're being good students by learning.
Right.
And we want to know, what the heck does this look like? Like, what does it actually look like and feel like? So right now, I'm actually teaching skills around process-based therapy by talking about variability, selection, and then we can talk about retention. But we're doing it in an applied way. And that's always been my thing, is how do I get this applied so people can actually use it in their lives?
Yeah.
And I'm particularly interested in high achievers, stuck high achievers, because that's what I am.
Yeah, you are.
Or I've been in my life, of like figuring out how to get people that have a tremendous
You're still there, girlfriend.
We can talk about that. But figuring out how to get people that are, that have a lot of juice to them, but that are either completely squeezed out, like they got nothing left because they're burned out, or they're putting their energy into places that are not meaningful, that are not going to be, at the end of their life, they're going to look back and say, yeah, I'm so glad that I did it. What a journey. That was fun, and it was worth it. So I'm interested in helping those folks. And I think that the principles of ACT and the principles of contemplative practice.
And your own inner wisdom.
And your own inner wisdom could be helpful for that. So that would be my selection criteria. Is it meeting those, values-based goals of mine? Serving people in this way and also bringing me vitality. And then if it's not, then let's change course. And I would hope that I'm not doing the same thing 10 years from now.
Yeah, I think it's important to you. I mean, you obviously have a really successful, thriving private practice, but you're only reaching and working with that one individual. But through the podcast, you're able to do kind of the same work. What I'm hearing you say is that you want to do the same work that you do in your individual private practice, but on a broader scale. Or to reach more people.
Sometimes I wish I could put a camera in my therapy room.
Yeah, exactly.
Because the stuff that happens in private practice for me with my clients is so powerful. I mean, it's what is something that happens when people come into therapy in terms of their willingness to open up and learn new things and take perspective on themselves. I think that's something that we all need to be doing. You and I do it in our friendship.
Yeah.
I mean, this is the pros of being friends with psychologists, but most of us aren't. We're living on the surface of our lives, having surface conversations about what we're going to do this summer.
Yeah.
And not actually talking about where we feel stuck, where we feel a loss of vitality in our sex lives, in our friendships, in our exercise, in our whatever, and how to get unstuck from that. So that's the variability selection. And then we have retention, which is what.
Okay, so you just took my mind to a different place, Diana, where I'm like,
talking about sex lives.
What? Yeah, I'd be curious about that too. But also, like, just why can't we? Like, we're so closed off in our own individual therapy, our private practices. I feel like I would love to blow that up and give visibility to what's happening in those sessions. What was truly transformative about this process? What was super meaningful to you? What was it like sharing the story with your therapist?
Right.
What were some of the harder sessions? What were some of the, you know, I don't know. That would be really helpful to other people who are also in therapy, or I don't know, just give a real life example of what's really happening.
Right. Well, and why can't our relationships be as intimate as our therapy in the world too?
Like, I'm ready to bring the individual therapy to this platform and this conversation right here.
Yeah.
Like, why does it have to be so?
Why does it have to be so behind closed doors? Yeah.
Well, I mean, well, actually, to some extent, I'm willing to totally share my dirty laundry.
Put the brakes on you.
Yeah, I mean, so
yeah, you probably have to put the brakes on me. I guess what I'm interested in is what are universals? Mm-hmm. So, you know, I can see 6 clients in a day, and of those 6 clients, I can say, wow, there was a universal theme that showed up amongst those 6 clients, even though they're completely different people.
Yep.
Or, you know, we just spent a weekend together. There are some universal themes amongst us. You and I have totally different problems and things that are hard for us in our life. But when you actually dig down underneath, it has some core similar stuff, like feelings of not good enough.
Yes.
Feelings of worthiness.
Yeah.
And when you start to see that common humanity of hearing someone else's story and hearing successful people's story, like successful people are just as stuck as unsuccessful people. That's where I think it could be interesting.
Absolutely. Yeah, that's actually one of the common questions that I have for you when we haven't talked in a while. Like, what's the pulse on the people that you're seeing and your clientele? Like, what are the main issues? What are the main themes? Like, I'm always asking about that, right?
Yeah.
Like, it feels like I am.
Yeah.
Because that may be different in your amongst your clientele than it is amongst mine. But I have a curiosity of, you know, just knowing what's happening right now. What are the common issues?
Yeah. Are you asking that?
Am I asking? Yeah, I am asking that. What are the clients? Thank you for that prompt.
Yeah.
Yeah. Let me ask directly. What is going on? Who do you have in your client?
I'm not going to reveal any.
You can't reveal names.
Private information.
But what are the common themes?
Like common themes.
Ages, stages.
Yeah.
You know, so, what's happening?
Yeah. So there's the age and stage of the late 20s, early 30s.
Okay.
Which are about, like, what am I doing with my life? Am I going to have children? Or if I do have children, how do I handle all of this? This sort of like identity shift that happens in the 20s and 30s, but then also this drive to land, to figure out your career, to make sure your kids have a good life, and a bit of urgency around all of that. It feels like you need to do it all fast and now.
And are people not having it all? Like, are they still going in the, like, in a predictable, I'm getting my job first and then I'm picking my life partner and then I'm having kids?
No, it doesn't happen like that.
Or is it like, yeah.
It never happens like that.
It happened like that for me.
I know, because you're how well has it worked out for you? Like,
in some ways, well.
Yeah.
In some ways, really well.
In some ways, really well. Like, really clear path. For a lot of people,
I wasn't very flexible with my path. You know, I had in my mind a narrative of how I wanted my life to go, and it had to, in my mind, it was kind of rigid to be in a certain order.
Right.
So I did, I mean, I really, literally was not going to commit with anybody until my career was in place, at least my graduate school training. And, you know, I needed to get my landing. It was very important to me. I was really, really rigid about that. That's why I didn't marry some of those earlier people, some of those exes.
Yeah.
Right.
Well, yeah. So that type of rigidity, that type of story of how's it supposed to look, right, can can lend to you making decisions that are based on exactly like that. What's the rule?
Yeah.
As opposed to going with the flow, the natural flow of your life. And at least what I have noticed with a number of my clients is that when they go with some of the flow of the flow of their lives, that's when amazing things happen. That's when doors open up that you weren't expected or expecting, or opportunities or relationships or sabbaticals. I mean, you were kind of going with the flow of sabbatical in the sense of like, hey, it's just due, I'm just going to do it, as opposed to I need to have it all lined up in order to do, I need to have my proposal perfect in order to do the sabbatical.
Sure.
Same thing with the book. Like, the book just organically evolved. This concept evolved out of your life experience.
So are your clients struggling with that? Are they also scripted in their narratives? Are you helping them with big choices in their 20s and 30s?
So 20s and 30s, what I'm trying to help them do is keep their perspective open. So that's the process of perspective taking, of really taking a bigger, broader view than this narrowed, my life has to look a certain way. And helping them trust in the unfolding of things a little bit more and not feel like they have to get there so quickly.
Well, that's so scary.
Yeah, they want to get there quickly. It's sort of like kids wanting to get through school quickly or grow up quickly, and then they realize, oh crap, it was actually so good. It was so good to be in kindergarten.
I couldn't enjoy it. I want to go back.
Yeah, so that is sort of your 20s and 30s, is you're trying to get somewhere,
but you don't realize how good you have it, folks.
It is so good. Yeah, and it's also so painful. So that's the 20s and 30s. And then we move into the 40s, which often for folks is a feeling of stagnate. Like late, a little bit later 40s, a feeling of stagnation. Like you've been having sex the same way with your partner for years.
Or not.
You've been having the same breakfast for years. You do your same workout routine. You go to work. Your kid, you're going through the motions of pick up and drop off and bedtime and wake up, and it's lost its juice. And then you start to realize, wait a minute, I still got something in me. Maybe you realize that, like, I still got something in me. I'm you know, I'm in my 40s. I've got some energy here, but I am so trapped in the sameness. And there's some of that. Oftentimes that's where I see a lot of dissatisfaction in marriages.
And are people still labeling it like the, you know, In your practice, do you still kind of, are people perceiving it as the midlife crisis? Or would you conceptualize it differently?
Midlife opportunity is how I view it. It's not a crisis. It's an opportunity. It's a wake up.
It's a wake up.
Yeah.
Like, my life is at the halfway point and I want to shake things up. I want more vitality. I want more fun. I want more play.
Yeah. Depending on your longevity view, maybe the third way point, not the halfway. But yeah.
Sure.
Yeah,
so yeah, because I'm going to live to like 120.
You are.
You too.
Yeah.
You better.
All that Organifi. Do you relate to that? Because you're in 40s. What's your 40s?
I think I've done a pretty good job at living my life, like in each stage and age, don't you?
Yeah.
Compared to a lot of our peers, I feel like I have.
I'm comparing.
I shouldn't compare, but I think I've had that.
But where's the stuck points for you in the 40s then?
Probably feeling like it relationally, like, not in terms of friendships, but intimacy, romantic partnerships. Like, am I selling myself short? Am I getting my needs really met? Am I giving too much? Am I just so unaccustomed to receiving that I don't know how? And what do I really want? What do I really, really want? I'm so used to not looking at my own needs and wants. And so there's a little bit of a deprivation there. And so turning towards self-love and connection with myself versus being so focused outwardly. Yeah. I mean, I really love being focused outwardly. And
I love
my students. Yeah. I love my friends. I love, you know, you know, I love my life. I love what I do. I love my career.
Yeah.
So all of this is very important, but what I give out is pretty solid, but what I receive and what I actually really need is kind of a sore spot. It's a sticking point.
Okay. I feel like that's a 40s thing, is the wake up to that. Don't you, because there's so much giving. So there's so much giving, especially if you're a parent and you've had children, and if you've been building a career. And if you're in a relationship, all of those, And there is that wake up to, wait a minute, what is it that I actually, what is it that I need? Which is different from values, which is about what is it that I need to receive from the world? And then values are what, like, how do I want to be in the world?
Mm-hmm. So you see this show up for your clients that are in their 40s?
Yeah.
And what are they wanting to receive? Are there common themes?
Well, oftentimes it's related to their primary relationship with their spouse. Mm-hmm. Of they are not feeling like their needs are getting met.
I don't even know what you're talking about. My relationship is perfect, so.
Yeah. They're not feeling like their needs are getting met, or they're seen. Really, most
and is
of
it
us
realistic, or is it realistic? Like, yes, this is okay, this is an issue, or is it just more fantasy land, like, I want more?
It can be both.
It can be both.
I also think it's an issue because as we age in our relationships, we do less of seeing the other person.
Mm-hmm.
As in, the other person becomes a piece of furniture in our home.
Yeah, that's,
you know, or like the refrigerator, you can go in and you get something out, or
the
you
toaster.
Often use the toaster example. What's the toaster example?
This is borrowed. I think this is from Dr. Ramani. You might be seen as, it's possible that you're seen as like the toaster. And so your partner goes in the morning to the kitchen. The toaster is on the counter. They put the bread in, use the toaster, you know. Then they go off on their day. They go to their home office or they go to work, wherever that is. They're not expecting later in the day that toaster to get off the counter, walk into their room and be like, hi, how are you? Or I have a question, or I have a need.
I have a need.
They're like, what? Like, what? Toaster, you're supposed to be over there.
Yeah, do your job. Yeah, I feel like I've been both sides of that toaster, you know? Because I have put my toast in and, you know, and don't bother me. Tell me when it's done. And I've also been, you know, I put the toast
here with the toast.
You're the toaster, I'm the toast. Not with us, but I'm
the toaster.
They don't mention first names on this podcast of my husband.
Gosh.
Yeah. That's okay. It's fine. No last names. He has a different last name than me, so I'm pretty safe with that. But yeah, so the toaster. Yeah, I've been toasting. And so that is also something I think that in your 40s, you look at both sides of that. Is it that I have been just allowing myself to be a toaster and not saying what I really need in my relationship, or not having expectations that are like healthy expectations of I need to be seen, or I need to be heard, or I need to be taken care of, or I need to be pleased?
Mm-hmm.
Or vice versa, am I doing that to another person?
Mm-hmm.
Because it's just easy and we've gotten into that routine. That is like the 40s are like, you realize that you're stuck and you realize that it could be potentially better. And then my hope is, I'm not in my 50s yet, but when I work with people in their 50s, I do see
what
there can be, oh, it can get good.
Well, how so?
The successful folks, the ones that I earmark and I'm like, I want to be like you, often are doing career shifts in their 50s. Mm-hmm. They're doing tweaks to make it a greater use of their skill set, a greater, you know, valuing themselves in their career, more creative outlets in their career. I see relationships, especially primarily, I see this more with women. Unfortunately, men need to, this is an area where I want to work with men on, is seeing how you can deepen your relationships in your 50s.
Mm-hmm.
Travel.
So wait, what did you mean by that? Women are actually deepening their relationships or making relationship shifts more?
That's a blanket statement, but men have been so busy toasting or being a toaster.
Uh-huh.
They often are not investing in friendships.
Uh-huh.
And they had good friendships. Like in their 20s, these guys had buddies.
Uh-huh.
They went and got a beer with somebody. They went and, you know, met up at the basketball court. They talked about their sex lives. They talked about stuff with other men.
Mm-hmm.
Their hopes. I would say also in same-sex couples, there can be this stagnancy that happens.
Mm-hmm.
And you kind of get partnered up and you don't, you don't go out and find friends.
Mm-hmm.
Because you've been so busy. I was going to say it's understandable. This is not, there's anything wrong with you. It's just, this is the understandable course of things when you're building a career and you're building a family and you're trying to get your feet on the floor, this life.
So what are people doing in their 50s? Are they replacing their toaster or are they fixing their toaster?
Sometimes replacements are needed. But I actually think you got to go for the fix first, right? So
yeah, you got to
and the fix requires a lot of vulnerability, openness, work, willingness, variability. Back to that concept again. Doing something different in your relationship than the way that you've always done it. What do you do when you walk in the door? Do it differently. It could be, I'm going to go in and I'm going to give him a hug, or I'm going to offer appreciation, or before I ask about anything logistics wise, I'm going to acknowledge something that I notice in them. We really decrease the amount of appreciations we give to our partner over time. And it's important to increase appreciation, this whole concept of like what you water grows. And noticing strengths, remembering the things about your partner that you fell in love with, and look for them and highlight them. But doing things differently. So that's the working on the toaster. Working on the fixing of the toaster is also, this is something that you and I have talked a lot about, is looking at your own attachment patterns from your early childhood and from your early relationships and how they're bleeding into and influencing and shaping your attachment with your partner. And that requires a good amount of work and willingness on both parties. And then seeing the dance about how our attachment patterns are playing out with each other. Because it's always a dance between two people. It's never one person. That toaster's not working.
Yeah. You know? Yeah.
Attachment.
And then it's like the big question of if both parties aren't able to do that, then does the person have the courage to pivot or jump?
Right.
And that's probably happening big time in the late 40s, 50s. Like, people are making those hard, excruciatingly painful decisions.
Yeah. It is excruciating and painful. And it's not impossible. There was a New York Times article that I sent you on that. I don't know if you got it. I sent it like at 1 o'clock in the morning when I couldn't sleep.
I haven't checked yet.
The worst place to go at 1 o'clock in the morning is New York Times. But I read this article on divorce and friendship. And it was like an op-ed where a woman was talking about going through just her own experience of separating from her partner and how she went to therapy, she did yoga, she practiced mindfulness, she, you know, did all these things, but it was really her friends that helped her get through that.
Oh, for sure.
And that's where it's, no matter what it is you're going through in your 50s, you're going to go through something, and you're going to go through increasingly more things. So you're going to, maybe it's not you're going to go through a divorce, but you're going to go
through
a health issue,
aging parents, absolutely, troubles with your children, right?
Yeah, I think that was the what we just talked about this past weekend. Like, we had health issues, we had aging parents, we had troubles with our children. What is a thread that could support you in all of those is your relationships and your friendships.
And women do have that to more extent. And it's a generalization.
Yeah. But we all can be working on it. And it doesn't have to be same-sex friendships. We can have friendships with, you know, men. You can have, it doesn't have to be so
unless
binary.
You're a toaster.
Unless you're a toaster. Why?
Because there's control. If you're a toaster, there are rules. You
right.
know, you might not be allowed to have same-sex friendships or, you know, opposite-sex friendships, depending on the particular relationship you're in.
Yeah. So, variability, again. That there's starting to think about, you know, getting more open in the way that you're thinking about things and seeing possibilities for yourself or your relationship or your career that weren't there. And sometimes in the 50s, that can really come into fruition for folks. And when it does, it's really exciting to work with people that are doing that. I find it so fun and also really, they're scared. But evolution has variability. It has selection, which is selecting the things that are working or also not putting energy into the things that are no longer working, choosing to jump, right? And then the last part is retention, which is the reinforcement and the retention of the things that are a benefit to you, that are working for you. So that's the friendship part. Like, friendship requires retention. It requires reinforcing these relationships and sticking with relationships when they're uncomfortable because you want to keep them around. Like, friendships are not you know, easy.
It's not a solo cup. It's not a solo red cup. Friendships are the, you know, the fine wine glass or the, you know, champagne flute.
Yeah. We were working on our presentation for ACBS yesterday. Mm-hmm. And I could feel it. We were starting to collaborate on something.
And I was resisting.
I was controlling.
I was resisting. I was not in the headspace. I was like, no, this is vacation time. I cannot go. I can't do work.
Yeah, well, I was in the controlling space of like, we need to get this stuff done because a month out deadline to me is due tomorrow. I'm not a last minute person.
And I'm a successful procrastinator. I like to call it successtination.
Yeah, you are. So stuff like that is like, okay, here we are. We're in this little moment. It was just a mini moment. I mean, nothing mm-hmm. major, but it was in a mini moment.
A felt mini moment
between us. And I was like, well, gosh, Diana, just drop it. Just, you know.
And you did.
This is evolution.
High five.
High five, because I haven't dropped it before.
Oh.
Another friendship.
You dropped it for me.
Another collaboration.
You dropped it for me.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Okay. So I think this is a good, maybe a good space to stop.
Okay.
What do you think?
Yeah.
Any summary? Any takeaways?
I just love this conversation. I really appreciate it and love it. And thank the listeners for hanging with us while I'm driving in the car. We're driving in the car.
Yeah.
This is a first for us.
Yeah, so we're in Summit County of Colorado. You've probably seen the mountains behind us. We're driving along a beautiful river here behind a King Soopers truck. We've got to love King Soopers in Colorado. And we thought, might as well just record this thing in the service of variability and doing something different and seeing if it works.
And now we'll have to hang up so we can get to the really juicy stuff.
Okay. Let us know if you like it.
Thank you so much for listening to this episode of Your Life in Process. When you enter Your Life in Process, when you become psychologically flexible, you become free. Please join me as a member at yourlifeinprocess.com. And if you like this episode or think it would be helpful to somebody, please leave a review over at podchaser.com or call me at 805-457-2776. Email me at podcast@yourlifeinprocess.com. I want to thank my team, Craig, Ashley Hyatt, Elaine Schmelkin, and thank you to Ben Gold at Bell & Branch for his original music. This podcast is for informational and entertainment purposes only, and it's not meant to be a substitute for mental health treatment.